Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in food, weight, and body image issues, and I'm here to help you lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. You know, it really is possible to lose weight and gain health all without ever going on another diet. If you'd like to call in and talk with me, the number is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. I really want to hear from you, so please don't be shy. Give me a call. So I got an email from someone, and it was a very short email, and this is what they said. They said, "Is it really possible to lose weight without dieting, or is that some kind of a gimmick?" This person was very, very skeptical, which I totally get. Well, yes, it really is possible to free yourself from a lifetime of dieting and see results that lasts. And, you know, I'm going to tell you about one of my patients. I'm going to call her Tessa. And she lost weight and kept it off, all without dieting. And at first, she was very skeptical about my approach, which was, different than anything she had ever tried before. So, because she had tried everything, you know, every diet, every workout, everything short of surgery. And she figured at that point she had nothing to lose by giving my non-dieting approach a try. And just to give you a sense of Tessa, I'll never forget our first session because it was on the hottest, stickiest, most scorching, most uncomfortable day of the summer. And Tessa showed up wearing jeans and a long-sleeved t-shirt. And she was like, "I'd rather have heat stroke than let anyone see my legs." So, poor Tessa. And she felt really stuck. And she said that every part of her life was pretty good, except her binge eating was getting worse. Things with food were getting worse. She was gaining weight. And she said, "How do I get over this terrible eating problem?" So, like Tessa, you may think you have an eating problem, or you may know someone who does. And the reality is, I assure you, with absolute certainty, that you do not have an eating problem. In fact, there is no such thing as an eating problem. The problem is not what you're eating. The problem is what's eating at you. Now, weight loss diets focus on what you're eating, but not why. Diets don't address what makes you turn to food in the first place, because if you're turning to food, you are turning away from something else. So let's imagine you have a garden in your backyard, or just imagine the garden you do have in your backyard. So if every day you go to that garden and you see weeds have popped up among your flowers and you pull them out, what happens when you don't get to the roots? Well, your garden would look pretty good for a little while, like maybe a day or two, and then the weeds would grow back and you'd have to start all over and you would be constantly weeding. So diets are like weeds, and it's likely that you keep pulling weed after weed after weed to resolve your weight problem. It works for a while. Diets work until you go off them, and none of them are sustainable. And then you find yourself right back where you started. And maybe you feel miserable because you feel out of control. Maybe you hate the way you look. Well, the reason you're still struggling is you haven't gotten to the root of why you're eating or dieting or binging. And there is always a reason. And that is because that root is out of your awareness. It's in your unconscious. It's hidden from you. And you cannot solve a problem that you can't see. And so what does it take to find those roots and pull them out? You have to access those unconscious motivations, the things that are hidden. And that's where I come in. Right? I do this show because I want to help you look inside yourself. I want to help you shine a light on those hidden ideas and emotions that have probably been there for a long time and they maybe since you were young in childhood, and they can manifest as you know, deeply embedded values and beliefs that you have about yourself and the world. And these buried feelings may cause you to use food to nurture yourself when you're triggered by people and events, and you haven't accessed these hidden parts because you didn't know they were there. So if you've always believed your inability to get control of food and weight problems were due to a lack of willpower, they are not. I am here to help you shine a light on those parts of your mind and get to the source of whatever's eating at you so you can make some permanent changes. And just quickly getting back to Tessa, her problem was she could not stop binging at night. And she stayed very busy all day, which meant her mind was occupied by work all day. And she could maintain a kind of a normal relationship to food all day, a normal lunch, breakfast, whatever. But at night, it was totally different. Even though she'd eat a normal dinner and afterwards she wasn't hungry, she would find herself at the pantry, at the refrigerator. She'd start snacking. She'd be completely unable to stop. And she said, like, what's wrong with me? I'm not hungry, and yet I can't stop eating. I must have a problem with food. But the real problem was that Tessa never felt like she was good enough, and she actually had terrible self-esteem. And so her lifelong solution to feeling bad about herself was to eat for comfort and then get upset at herself for eating. And so only when she changed the way she felt about herself and the way she related to herself did she stop overeating. And yes, she lost weight. In fact, I was her last stop before gastric bypass surgery. At the time, it was before a lap band. She was going to do gastric bypass, which is, whew, that is quite a surgery with horrible, horrible side effects. And it's brutal. And so I was her last-ditch effort at a non-surgical solution. And she never got the surgery, and she did lose weight. So, yay! So, what about you? What are you struggling with? What are the roots that we might need to get to with you? Give me a call at 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. And let's talk. So until someone calls, which hopefully will be soon, I'm going to talk about a little bit more about Tessa since I started talking about her. Let me give you some background. So Tessa was raised by these parents who really wanted her to succeed. And so they were never satisfied with her performance in school or in sports or in anything. Like they wanted her to be her best. And so nothing she did, hold that thought, I'll get back to Tessa later. Hi, Nick, I recognize your phone number. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I'm Echo. I should call right back. This is Nick.
Yes. Okay. You know what? Maybe you want to turn off your.
I got rid of it.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
A little bit of it.
And to the caller who's trying to call now, please call me back when I'm off the phone with Nick. I can unfortunately only pick up one call at a time. So, hi, Nick. What's going on?
Oh, I'm talking about dieting, and I haven't had a chance. I guess I haven't thought about dieting in a while. I mean, I think I've had it scheduled, not getting on the scale and so on. And then now I went to the doctor because I had a problem that was bothering me, and he prescribed some medicine. And I feel heavy, and I checked this out, and I gained a lot of weight for me. Well, and now I have a situation where I have to lose weight, which I haven't had to do in a long time.
Do you have to lose weight because the doctor told you you have to lose weight, or is this you think you have to lose weight?
No. The medicine itself is putting weight on me. So they didn't even mention it, that it would make you gain weight. Mm. And so what I did is called back the pharmacy and I asked them, what were the side effects of this medicine? And then I asked him, is it gaining weight? He said, oh, yes, you'll gain weight with this. And so after it, and I see this, and I've been eating regularly, which I've been doing for a while, and keeping my weight where I was wanted it to be, and now thrown to me, and I look at, I mentioned once before, it's like being in jail, having to diet, you know, and really watch yourself and so on. And I've done that, and I've been really good. But now, people wondering how to diet. I have to diet all over again.
Oh, wait, Nick. And, I have a different suggestion, because I want to break you out of diet jail. Right? We don't want you to go back into that horrible diet prison and cycle of dieting and losing weight and being obsessed, right? Which you've described on the show before. What if you go to your doctor and say, this side effect is I cannot handle this side effect. Please give me another medication that doesn't have this side effect.
That I can do, but I think that I think that the medication, what it is something that's going to make me gain weight with whatever they give me. But I will do that. I have a call into the doctor and the same into go and see the pharmacy. But this is what the bottom line. I'm gaining weight and I'm not eating all these things I wish I could eat.
So you're gaining really weight because of the medication, and so this must feel very unfair, as if the universe is playing a cruel trick on you.
Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Because, come on. If someone says, "Hey, you got to take 5 or 8 pounds on you," you can eat whatever you want. I mean, that would be great. But you know, I don't live in a world like that. It's just so frustrating that this is happening.
Yes, I'm so sorry.
I'm saying it's not fair in the situation.
It sucks. It's not fair. And when something like that happens, it can bring up old feelings of, I mean, not that everything is about the past, but often when we have a situation in the present that just affects us in a certain way, it can also bring up old feelings in which you felt something similar, where life wasn't fair or something was happening outside of your, you know, awareness, or it wasn't something you were doing, but you had some penalty that you paid because of it. So I just want to say I am so sorry. It does feels like the cure is worse than the disease for you. But mm-hmm. Hopefully there will be an alternative medicine that will not have this side effect.
Yeah, I do too, and it's just also thinking about when I was, you know, I look at myself as being heavy or something, or putting on weight, and you're right, it makes me think about other times in my life, although I'm not heavy, it makes me think that the times when I was not happy because I was heavy,
well,
and I don't need those thoughts.
No,
I
believe that when we've talked before, you also associate some character defect or like unlikability, as if you're either a good weight or a bad weight. And if you're at a good weight, you're likable and lovable and people enjoy you and want to be with you. And in your mind, when you're at a bad weight, heavy, that makes you unlikable, unlovable, so that you have tied your weight very much to your sense of lovability. And so that's why it's even more acute. But if you separate that and really own, like, hey, I'm lovable because of the person I am, and a few pounds, whatever it is, even 10 pounds, whatever it is, I don't know how much it is, but it doesn't make you that unlikable. I think you were in high school when you said that you felt like people didn't like you because you were heavy. Yeah. That Nick is not his weight.
Okay. Thank you again.
You're very welcome. But does that resonate for you? Because when you want to then lose weight, what you're really wanting to lose is your unlovability, right?
Yeah, I have to think. I have to think like that. I can't think the other way. You're absolutely right. I got to think in a positive way of myself, because I don't want to. You're right. I don't want to get caught the other way, because that'll just make me miserable, and I don't want to be miserable.
Amen to that. And you don't deserve it. You seem like a very nice guy. You call me almost every week, and I can tell that you are just a good person and a nice person, and I hope that you can see yourself in that way as well. And think about this. If a friend of yours went on medication and gained X number of pounds, you wouldn't suddenly be like, yeah, you know, I liked him much better when he was thinner.
If only he
would lose weight, then I can like him again.
Okay.
Okay? Give you some perspective?
Okay, friend.
All right. Talk to your doctor, Nick, because sometimes there are good alternates. Okay. Take good care.
Okay.
Bye.
You too. Thank you.
Bye. Aw. Nick. I love his dedication and his willingness and his openness and his vulnerability. It's a wonderful thing. And to the other caller who was calling in while I was talking to Nick, now is a great time to call me back. And until you do, or no, someone does, I'm going to keep telling you about Tessa. So, like I was saying, Tessa's parents really wanted to encourage her to be her best, but their way of encouraging her was actually quite discouraging, because they were never satisfied with anything she did. If she got a report card with, you know, 5 A's and a B, they were like, what's with the B? When she got 100% on a test, they wanted to know why she didn't get extra credit. When she set a personal record in track and field, they told her that she could do even better the next time. When she... Oh, hold on. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina.
Hey, Nina, this is Anne. How are you?
Hi, Anne. Anne from New York, yes?
New York, yeah, great memory.
How are you?
Good. I'm doing really well. I wanted to call today about something that I've had a lot of people talk to me about in terms of they're struggling with it, and I've noticed that it's one of the things that I probably struggle the most with food, and that is sugar. So I don't know if it's the diet industry's newest darling or what it is, but for some reason that is the trickiest thing for me. I can be really good at intuitive eating and ask my body what I want, but with sugar, probably because I feel like it's so bad, I have to, like, I know that I don't have to, but what I notice going on inside of myself is this need to eat something just to prove to myself that I can, kind of as a like, screw you to all the haters. And I, like, don't love that, obviously, and I've noticed it. So when I've noticed it, I've been able to become more non-judgmental of it, and what I've been trying to do is just notice non-judgmentally how I feel when I eat sugar, so I can just decide for myself whether I like it or not. And I've realized that there are some things that sit fine, and there are other things that definitely don't, and there are times of day or, like, empty stomach, or, you know, there are things that definitely impact it. But part of the reason why I wanted to bring it up today was especially, you know, the holidays are coming up, and all of my family members just have such strong opinions on it. My dad hasn't eaten sugar in a very long time, and so it's almost like this taboo thing in our house where it's you like know, heroin. The parent is morally saying, like, is equating sugar with a moral, with a good or a bad. And it's something that my mom has struggled with as well and hasn't really resolved. And so I know family things are coming up. I know this has been a weak spot for me. I know I'm probably not the only person out there who's like, what the heck do I do with sugar? If I'm giving up dieting, like, what's my relationship to this entity? And, so I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, it's a great question. Because so often sugar is demonized, and it's like you're talking about heroin, right? That's why, your family has made it this moral issue. We don't do sugar. No, we don't do sugar in our house, right? And it's this, sugar is it's not really good for you, but it's not heroin. And a lot of times people have a sense of moral superiority when they don't have it. But the problem is, what happens when you tell yourself you can't have something? It's like if I say to you, don't think about a giant pink hippopotamus, what's the first thing that you're going to think of? A giant pink hippopotamus. So, so when that sets you up for the anticipation of deprivation. But I want to also say something about sugar, because so many people think that it is an addictive substance. And the reason they think it's an addictive substance is they point to all of these studies that say, oh, look, you know, when you eat sugar, your dopamine levels go up, and then you want more and more of the sugar, and they activate the release of dopamine in your brain. It's a little more complicated than that, but I'll just say that that's basically why people think it is an addictive substance, because it changes your brain, which on the surface sounds very reasonable, right? Oh, it changes your brain. It must be an addictive substance. But wait. You know, sugar does change your brain, but a lot of things change our brains. Any activity involving pleasure releases dopamine in our brains, and that includes sex, exercise, sports, you know, spending time with friends, listening to music. There was a study about 6 years ago, and they proved that listening to classical music had the same impact on your brain as cocaine. Which is staggering, right? But no one's going to say, "Ooh, you're addicted to classic. You're addicted to Tchaikovsky."
So now we know what an ineffective cocaine therapy would be. Yes. Classical music.
Classical music. And there are a lot of studies that really, from a scientific standpoint, refute the notion of food addiction. But of course, that doesn't matter. Science doesn't matter if you feel like an addict. And that that way, that's where it brings me to the psychology of quote-unquote sugar addiction. There have also been studies that set out to prove that sugar addiction was real, right? And they told people, you're going to eat all these foods that you think you can't eat. And they thought, oh, these people are addicts. They're going to start eating ice cream, and they're not going to be able to stop. What do you think happened, Anne? What do you think happened?
My guess is they had ice cream 3 days in a row and decided that they were sick of it.
Yes. When they got permission, when they had permission from this outside authority to have these foods, they actually ate less instead of more. And so this was the opposite of what these food addiction theorists expected, and they were really surprised. But I'm not surprised, because it highlights the importance of psychology when it comes to eating sugar. You know, because we have brains, which is the physical control structure of our bodies, but we also have minds. And so when you are telling yourself you can't have something, you're going to want it more. When you tell yourself you can't have something and you want to rebel, you're going to have what you're telling yourself you can't have. And so kind of normalizing that just sugar is just another kind of food that you can have or not will actually make you decide whether you want it or not. kind of like I've talked a lot about, it was last Thanksgiving, not this recent Thanksgiving, when my daughter and my husband and I and her friends were trick-or-treating, and here she is, and she's got this like gigantic pillowcase full of candy, huge. And she's like, oh, I'm so hungry. I'm hungry. And my husband was like, well, you have like a ton of candy. Why don't you eat some candy? And she's like, no, I don't want to eat candy. I want real food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because she didn't have to rebel against anything. We're telling her, have it, don't have it. We trust you to regulate yourself. Her friend, whose parents were the ones that say, oh, you can only have two pieces of Halloween candy per day, and we're going to hide it and dole it out to you. She's the one who ate, you know, 20 pieces on Halloween and got sick, because it was mm-hmm. that. It was people want what they think they can't have. When you say, I can have it if I want it, then you can decide if you want it or not.
So how would you approach that with the holidays coming up, with family members who don't feel the same way and who actively say things that don't align with that?
I would say email me, and I will send you a list of research studies that scientifically disprove what they believe. Then they don't have to take your word for it. You could say, yeah, but
show
what about
Thanksgiving dinner? All right, I have a pamphlet full of research studies I would like us all to read before we sit around the table.
Yes.
Like, at what point is that appropriate to bring up?
I think you say, look, you can believe what you want about sugar, but I've done my own independent investigation, and I find that your theory about sugar is not true. If you want to continue believing it, and if you want to torture yourself or feel better about yourself because you're not eating sugar, be my guest. But that's your choice. I'm going a different way. I no longer want to feel good about myself or bad about myself based on what kind of carbohydrates I put in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that.
Yeah. I'm going to practice that in front of a mirror. And maybe send you a recording of me saying that to myself. But yeah, I agree. I think, and you know, I think it's especially important to model other options for younger children, you know, that are watching and paying attention. Because I just feel like if they adapt the same behaviors, it'll be the same vicious cycle over and over and over again that people can never get out of, you know?
Absolutely. And so. It's terrible that you feel good about yourself or bad about yourself because of something that you eat.
Yeah.
You know?
Just say it for me and for all the listeners out there. It's okay to have sugar.
I give you all permission to have sugar, just like in those recent. In fact, I want you to have it. Have something sweet, because it's just a piece of pie or whatever it is. It's not a moral issue, and you may be afraid that you're going to eat the whole thing, and you won't, because if you say I can have it, then you can decide if you want it. Just like my daughter with the mm-hmm. Halloween candy, people are like, what? She was 9 at the time. She just turned 9. And they're like, how does a 9-year-old say that? Because that 9-year-old has never been told that she can't have that. She's been told that we trust her to regulate herself. And as a result, mm-hmm. she can. And when you trust yourself,
yeah.
when you no longer look at it like, ooh, let me have that as a reward, or let me have that because I'm going to be bad today, and it just becomes, do I want that dessert or not? You know?
Right.
Then it's a lot easier to make the decision. And if you say, I want that dessert, then enjoy it. Because the other part about this you know, sugar as a forbidden substance is then, you know, people eat it and then they feel guilty and they don't even enjoy it and they have more and more and more of it and then they feel sick and then they tell themselves they're never going to do it again. And the cycle continues.
And then that just repeats over and over and over again.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that in myself and my loved ones. And it's hard to get rid of the guilt for something that you've learned to be guilty about. You know, it's hard to retrain yourself to feel something different. But, yeah, I guess lastly, do you have any opinions or any advice on that, how to get rid of the guilt?
I think that guilt is about something you're doing wrong or something that you're not doing. We feel guilty when we're doing something we think is bad or when we are not doing something we think is good. So mm-hmm. I would just question the premise that you're doing something bad if you're eating sugar. This is, like you just said, you learned this. And what you learned, you can unlearn and learn something new. The scientific community calls it brain plasticity, which is really just you can teach an old dog new tricks, right? You can mm-hmm. learn something new. So start by challenging the notion, like an internal courtroom, challenge the notion that the prosecution is saying sugar is bad and it is a moral issue and you're doing something wrong if you eat it. Where's the defense attorney? No. Really? Sugar is bad and it's a moral issue and you're better if you don't eat it? Where's the evidence for that?
Mm-hmm.
There is no evidence.
Yeah,
no evidence.
Luckily, the internal defense attorney is probably cheaper than a real defense attorney, right?
That's right. So cultivate an opposition to the prosecutor and allow yourself to question the premise that there's something wrong with eating sugar.
Yeah.
Or something right about not eating sugar. Because the flip side of that is it gives people this sense of oh, I feel good about myself because I did not eat that. Well,
right.
I think there are many better things that you can feel good about yourself for not doing or, you know, for doing or not doing. It's just sugar.
Yeah. How do you reconcile that, though, with so many doctors and medical professionals saying, like, sugar isn't good for you? You know, in that way, isn't not having sugar similar to not having, like, well, maybe it's all about access, but not having excessive alcohol or drugs or something, you know, that isn't good for you?
You just said exactly what I was going to say, which is that there is a difference between use and abuse. There's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with having, you know, a piece of cake or some chocolate or some whatever form of sugar that you want every once in a while. But there is something when you abuse it. It's like the difference between having a glass or two of wine and having a whole bottle. Glass or two of wine, mm-hmm. no, you know, it may have health benefits. Oh, drinking a whole bottle, no, not so good. So
probably not.
Yes. So it's the amount, like, and people think that any amount of sugar is bad. No, it's not good, but we don't have, not everything we eat has to have incredible health benefits, right? So mm-hmm. there is a difference between moderation, eating it in moderation, and having way, way, way too much of it.
Yeah. And I like what you're saying, because as I've done that in my life, I've realized that's all my body wants. You know, like, after that one piece of candy, if I've given myself unlimited permission, it's like, no, I definitely don't want more. Like, that's fine. You know, or I guess, yeah, I've been paying attention to how it affects my body and what's happening, and I've noticed I become dehydrated or I get headaches and all of that. And so I realized, you know, moderation is actually all I want so that I can feel good and just function daily, you know? So I do think there's a lot of truth to that, but
well,
I'll let you know how it goes.
Yes, give it a try. I'm going to say it again. You have my permission to eat sugar. In fact, no, I want you to eat something. I want you to have dessert once a week. You have to.
So Thanksgiving dinner, I'm going to say, you know what, Mom and Dad, Nina said I had to. It's just
yes, absolutely. Yeah. And then, you know what, you can free your mind to think about much more interesting things than who's eating mm-hmm. sugar or not in your family.
Right.
In your family, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm so grateful for your help, and I'll let you know how it goes.
Wonderful. Thank you for calling in, as always. Keep us posted.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, bye. Bye.
I'm sure a lot of you can relate to the sugar question. So, yeah, what you can't have is what you want. When you can have it, you can choose whether you want it or not. And back to Tessa. So, Tessa really wanted her parents to appreciate what she did well instead of focusing on what she did not accomplish. And as much as she hated how her parents treated her, as much as she resented that they didn't see that what she was doing, they didn't acknowledge what she was doing, and they were always pushing her. And again, they were well-intentioned, but you know what they say about intentions and the road to hell? Anyway, they were well-intentioned, but they just made her feel like she could never do enough. So when Tessa grew up, she treated herself the same way that they did. She bought a new home, and she immediately thought, I should have been able to afford a more expensive house by now. When she made partner at her job, she wondered why she hadn't done so earlier in her life. So no matter what she accomplished, it was never good enough. Sound familiar, right? So she related to her accomplishments and achievements in her current life exactly the way she was treated by her parents in her childhood. And that also brings up the question of, hey, is it always about the past? Why can't we just deal with what's going on now? This is a question I get a lot. And so as you can see by Tessa's situation, we are often haunted by the ghosts of our past. We end up repeating our past in ways that are kind of unexpected, like we treat ourselves the way we were treated. So in that way, the past is alive in the present. And what we want to do on the show and what I do in my work with my private patients and my online programs is help put the past in the past. So when Tessa starts... I have a new caller. Hold on. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina. Welcome.
Hi, Dr. Nina. It's nice to be talking to you. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you. Who's this? What's your name?
This is Brian from Chicago.
Brian from Chicago. Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah, I normally don't listen to shows like this, but your material is, you know, it's so articulate, and you present it in such a warm way that, frankly, it kind of calmed me down enough to call you and dare to kind of talk about this a little bit out loud, just some concerns I've been having.
Wow. Well, thank you. You just made my day. So what's been going on? What concern do you have?
Well, I, you know, and I'm not saying this in a way that is designed to, you know, in any way demonize people who acknowledge that they have either disordered eating habits or, a less than ideal relationship to the way they see themselves physically. But I've never seen myself that way. But what's gotten me thinking lately is the fact that I like to work out. I like to be very physically active, usually every day, you know, body aches allowing. And I've noticed that if I can't get to the gym or can't get to a workout in a particular day, I'll restrict my eating pretty severely that day. And to me, it's always just made sense. If I'm not working to burn calories, I sort of feel like I shouldn't take too many calories in. But I began to wonder if that's perhaps not a sign of something more, that I'm restricting in some, you know, unhealthy or unbalanced way because I don't feel like I've, quote unquote, earned the right to eat. So I kind of wanted to just run that by you and see if that is, you know, on the spectrum of normal or if that's a thing.
Well, I think that's a great question. As you were talking, it brought to mind a a post I did on Instagram a couple weeks ago, and it was a quote that said, "Work out because you love your body, not because you ate cake." And it really is so appropriate to what you're talking about, the idea that you have to earn the right to eat, and that if you have, in your case, if you haven't earned it, that you have to restrict calories. What is the fear? What are you afraid is going to happen if you eat without earning those calories?
I've never actually stopped to try to put a name to the concern I've got, but I guess it would be that if I'm not sort of achieving that daily balance of calorie burning and calorie intake, then somehow I'm going to fall behind. And so, you know, there'll be this like, if I don't burn what I've taken in, then it's just going to stay in there. I mean, as I talk about it out loud, it sounds a little silly, but I think that I'm doing some sort of strange math.
But
in my head,
fall behind, and then what? So if you fall
behind,
then
my body won't be where I want it to be.
And then what?
And then I won't be as pleased with my, you know, my physical appearance as I want to be.
And when did you start having these, start recognizing that you had these concerns?
If I look at a calendar, I would say forever.
Well, forever goes back a while.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think there's some part of me that's always sort of done this balancing act.
And what if your body is not where you want it to be, what will that make you? What are your associations to not being in the very best shape that you can possibly be in?
I think the association is probably just to whether I'm, you know, attracted to other people, whether I'm pleased and proud of myself, or whether I feel a little bit, you know, sluggish. And I think some of that probably goes back to my dad, who was not an active guy. He was athletic in high school. He was a swimmer, but he really let himself go. And it, you know, it kind of coincided with just issues that he was dealing with where he felt inadequate in his family's eyes. And I think he kind of fell into a bit of a depression during the period of his life when I was old enough to appreciate what was going on. And so I think maybe as I try to talk this through with you, I equate that lack of activity and just sort of the taking in of calories but not really doing anything to be almost like a depressing feeling.
Or that is really insightful, Brian, because what you're saying is that if you're not on top of things and you're not the very, very best you can be, you're going to be like your dad and be let yourself go, be depressed, maybe depressing. And so what you're trying very hard not to be him is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of a sensible, I mean, I've not, you know, talking with you is helpful because I've not really ever articulated it in a way where I could like then hold it and identify, but that it all, this is all kind of resonating with me.
And what was your relationship like with your dad?
I loved him. I like to think of myself as close, but at the same time, he was a difficult guy. He was pretty stoic. He was hard to read. He was frequently kind of nonverbal. And so, you know, while we would try to spend time together, the relationship was sometimes, it had some friction in it. And, you know, a lot of times when I think back on memories, the good memories don't always involve us talking to each other. It's more that we were maybe doing something together. And, you know, I think because of the state of mind that he was in, as I got to be a bit older, when you would normally, you know, hope to spend more one-on-one time with your dad in a peer kind of way, he was already sort of in a bit of a depression. So a lot of that time spent was quiet. You know, it was just sitting with him or just exchanging the occasional word. So I definitely have, like, you know, warm and positive feelings towards him, but I also see a lot of the flaws, and I don't, you know, I don't I don't look back and think, oh, he was like my bud and we hung out all the time. You know, that would have been cool, but that's not what it was.
And I hear you talking in the past tense, so it sounds like your father is not with us anymore.
That's right. Yeah, he passed away some years ago.
Okay. And did you notice this sense of having to stay ahead of your calories? Did it get worse after he passed away or not?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it really, I don't think there was any particular spike that tied into anything like that. I think it's just, I've just sort of always been that way. But, you know, again, when my dad was an adult, when he had, you know, myself and my sister, he was already overweight and not really very physically active. So I think I just grew up watching him be kind of sedentary.
So it sounds like either you're who sounds very vigilant, maybe hyper vigilant about staying in shape, and you said you work. Did you say you work out every day?
I try to do it every day. Sometimes I just can't because my body is just, you know, my body's just telling me, yeah, I'm not having it, so I don't. But I try to do something.
Right. Okay. So it sounds to me as if there's a part of you that thinks it's either black or white. Either you're working out every day, you're staying, not falling backwards, staying ahead of your calories, all of that, being as fit as possible. You're either that, or you're your dad, you know, someone who who falls behind, and then all of the other things that go along with that, who's depressed and also not really present, not engaged, and you sound like a very engaging, you know, lively guy. So there's a part of you that through watching your food intake and your exercise, you're staving off this possibility of being your father, and maybe you have to question just that you're, you know, mm-hmm. that you can be you without the possibility that you could suddenly just fall behind and become him or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that makes sense.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So you, and to remember this from a practical standpoint, you don't have to earn the calories. You burn calories just by walking around the world. You know, we mm-hmm. need calories just to keep our hearts pumping and our blood flowing and all of that. So you don't have to earn the right to eat by exercising. And that's really important to keep in mind.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I think, tell me what your book is called. I think I want to get it. This has been really helpful, and I think I maybe want to just read a little bit more.
Wow. Brian from Chicago, thank you. Please call me back. It's called Food for Thought, Perspectives mm-hmm. on Eating Disorders, Food for Thought, by me, Nina Savelle Rocklin, and you can find it on Amazon. Can also get it on my website, winthedietwar.com, but I think it's easier to just get it through Amazon.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for taking my call and giving me some really cool insights. This is really helpful.
Thank you, Brian. Take good care. Call me back and let me know how it goes.
I will. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Aw. Boy. And I was just talking about how the past is in the present, right? I mean, we can't outrun our past. We can't starve away our past. We can't eat away our pasts. That example with Brian is a really good example of how our childhoods can continue to affect us in ways that we may not even realize. Thank you to all the callers who called in today, and thank you to all of you who are listening and who have taken the time to write me and let me know how much that you enjoy the show. That always makes my day. Thank you so much, all of you. I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio to give you the skinny on weight loss without dieting. Visit me at winthedietwar.com or find out about my online program at kickthediethabit.com. And I'd love to hear from you, so send me a message, email me. I'm reachable on email, Twitter, or Facebook, and let me know any questions that you'd like me to cover on the show. Thanks so much. See you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.